we're starting to sound like a college radio station with all this dead air.
Actually, I was listening to college radio this morning, and there was a guy on it, DJ, called himself DJ something.
His first name may be DJ.
I'm sure his Christian name wasn't DJ Snicksnack.
His name wasn't DJ, and his last name wasn't Snicksnack. No,
he was on the radio, and DJ is usually the appellation used by one performing on the radio.
Be that as it may.
I am certain his name was most likely not DJ.
Well,
DJ,
it's better jockey. Than the, you know, the Aidens, the Cadens, and the Cashes. And the
yeah, but he was probably going whatever. By a, it's almost like a form of pseudonym.
Mm.
They're almost like performing under a stage name.
You're listening to First Chapters, a podcast from Grey Cat Books, with your hosts, Engineer Mike and Nina McNamara. Ever wanted to know if the first few pages of a book were good enough to continue reading? Will a book be engaging enough, or will it bore you to death? Then keep listening. The plot thickens.
Hi, everyone. This is Nina McNamara, and with me is my co-host,
DJ Engineer Mike.
Jesus Christ. DJ yeah. Engineer Mike.
Yep.
And this is First Chapters, where we talk about crap we heard on the radio.
Yep, this is the all radio after show, where we just talk about radio shows.
And we also talk about books that have been turned into
streaming radio performances.
Exactly. Just like at the end
yep.
of
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Killers uh-huh. of the Flower Moon. Yeah, see, look at that.
Uh-huh.
We're tying this all
yep,
together. All of this is connected.
We're smart here.
Yeah.
We watched that whole movie.
We did.
Yep.
All in one go.
Sadly, it was just us.
It was just... No, that's not true.
I know. There were like four other people. Yeah.
Yeah. Four. No, yeah. No.
40. There were like 40 other people.
A lot of people watched that movie, just not enough yeah. people gave it its flowers.
Yeah.
Of the yeah. moon.
Yeah.
But what book are we reading today?
Today, we are eventually going to talk about the book called The Three-Body Problem.
Which is not about thruples.
It is not, no. Well, it's about the confusing nature of three similar bodies trying to reach harmony.
So it is about thruples.
It's about a sort of astronomical thruple.
Yes. Three-Body Problem by Xixin Liu. Is that its pronunciation?
Yeah, that's very close. Actually, yeah. Xixin. For any listeners here, we're not going to get the pronunciation of names correct in today's episode.
We're going to try, though.
We're going to try, okay. None of us here speak Mandarin, and trying to figure out how to pronounce Mandarin words correctly is not for the faint of heart.
It doesn't mean you shouldn't try, and it doesn't mean you shouldn't
sure,
be an asshole
sure.
Westerner.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know how to pronounce this.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Dealing with specifically a Mandarin name, you can be told how to say it as a Westerner. You will not get it.
No.
Because there are sounds in Mandarin that we do not have in our language. Like, we don't even have things close to them.
It's
like
a tonal language.
There's that too.
Yeah. yeah.
It's the actual second syllable in Liu Cixin's name, that Xin. Trying to read about how you're supposed to pronounce that. I read about it. It's the CH sound in the word cheap.
Yeah.
But said more like a Y. So xie. Like xie. But then with less rounding of the mouth than naturally happens.
Good Lord.
Okay. And what you did there was fine.
Okay.
Perfectly fine, yeah.
There's a lot of Chinese names in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep. Yep.
In fact, there's a very helpful guide at the very beginning.
Yeah, I love that they include that
yeah.
because otherwise you'd be absolutely lost.
Exactly.
Yeah, because yeah, Chinese names are very short compared to what we're used to in our culture. And because they're so short, they get very interchangeable very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And like most Eastern names, the last name goes first, the
yeah.
first name goes last.
So that's the thing is, I don't know if Cixin or Liu is his surname.
I believe Liu is the surname. It's written for a Western audience on this book.
See, I kept looking it up online. It was always Liu Cixin.
Yeah, Liu is the last
yeah.
name, the family name.
And
Cixin
okay.
is the first name. But before we get into that,
oh,
Engineer Mike,
yep.
what are you reading?
Ah, well, what I'm reading now or what I finished most recently? Or what I finished like last week, because there's three separate books.
What was not on the last podcast?
Oh, that would be one of three books. I started reading a few weeks ago The Martian by Andy Weir.
Oh, excellent.
It's a book I'd wanted to read for years and years and years, but had just avoided.
Because I know you've seen the film.
Yeah, I saw the film, but when it came out. Very popular book when it came out. And because of that, I kind of had it on my back burner of books. So it's like, hey, I'll get to this one day. There's some books that I weirdly just know I'm going to enjoy very much.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I'll put it off reading them. Because I'm like, oh, I'm going to blow through that in like a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to savor the thought of reading it long before I actually read it. And I started reading The Martian and finished it in about a week.
Yeah.
It was just a fun journey of a book. Just what a book. I can see why this book was immediately made into a movie just like a year or two later. Because the story is just, it's one of those books that say you had read this before it became a movie, you would instantly know, oh, you could make a movie out of this easy. It just takes to film really, really, really well. I stayed up way too late some nights reading this book because it was just, it's one of those books that because
that like, fun.
And the action never stops. The action never stops. You're reading about a character surviving literally day to day, not knowing if they're going to be alive the next day. So you don't want to stop reading. And then I got done with that in like a week and instantly had to read his next book.
Yeah.
Not his next book he wrote, but the next book he's very famous for called Hail Mary, which is a slightly different book.
Mm-hmm.
Also kind of a disaster story. And there's very little I could talk about when it comes to Hail Mary. Because Hail Mary, there's not a twist, but it's like a slow reveal of what's going on. It's a mystery kind of book where, unlike The Martian, where you know right away, he's a guy on Mars, he's stranded. That's the story, you know? Hail Mary is a mystery story.
Yeah.
That's kind of being unveiled. So there's not much I can say about it. And it wasn't as addictive as The Martian when it first began, but it got more and more interesting as time went on till towards the end of it. Yeah, I couldn't put the book down.
One of those slow burns.
It's definitely a slow burn of a book, yeah. And then just whammer. What's the trick? A whammer of an ending. Just like a whammer of ending.
Do you mean whopper?
No. See, I hesitated thinking about whopper. No, not a whopper.
Okay.
A whopper's a big thing, like the Burger King whopper. It's not a big ending, Hail Mary, but it's a whammer.
Mm-hmm.
Or it just kind of whams you upside the head. Bam, this thing happened. So we're going to call it a whammer.
A whammer.
The type of ending that Hail Mary is. So what are you reading?
I'm pulling a U. I'm reading two books at the same time. I know. The two books I'm reading so far, I started rereading A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn, which is one of my favorite books of all time. Mm. To get very political here, I believe it's the only history book anyone needs to read.
Mm.
And I'm not reading it from start to finish again. I'm reading it like chapter.
Reading the parts that upset you the most in the book.
Yeah, kind of. I'm starting in the 1900s and around chapter 15, is it? Let me check.
Nina is flipping through a book right now.
Yeah. Yeah, chapter 15, and I didn't get too far before I got really depressed, and I said, fuck it, I gotta go to sleep. But yeah, chapter 15, it's talking about early communism, early socialism, and people trying to unionize, and how the government quickly stomped that out.
Oh, yes, they shut that shit down.
Just before the crash in 1929, and it starts with someone getting strung up and having their genitals cut off, and it's just like, oh my god.
A lot of that going on in the early 20th century. You don't learn about that stuff in elementary school.
This is true.
No, you don't learn about the massive amounts of genital mutilation going on in America.
Yeah.
Weirdly doesn't get talked about.
No, it does not. Like, so much of this is missing from our history, our childhood history, and I get angry whenever I read this kind of stuff. I'm like, why didn't we learn about it? It's like, well, because it doesn't suit the narrative of the American dream.
And it's also very scary.
And it's scary. It's sad. Yeah. And again, because it makes you depressed before you fall asleep.
You don't want kids going home talking to their parents. Today, we learned in school about genital mutilation. No teacher wants the kids telling that.
No, but I mean, there are ways of teaching children and young people about this part of our history without, you know, saying someone's balls and dick got cut off because they wanted a better life for themselves.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know if there's a way to teach children about people cutting off balls and dicks and for non-ball and dick related reasons. Yeah, just because they were mean and they were a bad person. That's like, I don't know if I want to burden a 12-year-old with that.
I don't know. Neither here nor there. Anyway, I know I said I wanted to get political, but now I'm like...
Yeah, now you don't know.
No, I still do. But anyway, Howard Zinn, People's History of the United States. I give this book out as gifts.
Yes. No,
I have done this before.
Nina does frequently give this book as a gift to people.
I do.
You know Nina, you may get a copy of Howard Zinn's The People's History of the United States of America as a present for your birthday, Christmas,
Purim.
Purim. You may get a Purim present.
I love my coffee. My Howard Zinn is on the cover. Yep. This is on the coffee table. I had jury duty this week. I was going to bring this in and read it. And
The judge would appreciate that.
I'm sure they would have. Yeah.
I was going to recommend you not do that for jury duty.
Well, it was or complain about jury nullification. No, I wasn't going to do that at all. Anyway, that's the first book I'm reading. The second book I'm reading, it's an actual audiobook this time. I've noticed that I have problems reading sometimes. I've been wearing reading glasses since the beginning of the year. The audiobook I just started reading, as in today, Brené Brown's Atlas of the Heart. If you're listening to this right now and you know Brené Brown, you're probably laughing at me.
Aww.
Brené Brown is very popular in the...
Not self-help circles.
I wouldn't say she's self-help. She had a Netflix special a couple of years ago that really upped her popularity. She does give a lot of introspective advice.
Hmm.
She's got a lot of books. She's got a very popular podcast. People who listen to her say, oh no, this woman is very important to me and she says a lot of good things. So I started listening and I'm like, okay, I can see why this is interesting.
Yeah.
Now, I'm one of the biggest skeptics when it comes to self-help.
Good.
It doesn't matter who it is, whether it's, you know, Jordan Peterson on that side or whether it's someone like Brené Brown on this side. Anytime someone wants to sell me something about how to run my life, I immediately just turn my ears off.
Rightfully so.
I do want to hear what she has to say so I can say, yep, still selling snake oil.
You might say something that you might like. Yeah. You might jive with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting into our book of the week.
Yes. Let's start talking.
Which takes place on planet Earth.
It does. Yep, and it takes place in a very tiny little country called China.
The People's Republic of China.
No, in this it's China still.
You sure?
Yeah.
In the 1960s?
It starts in 1967.
This is why I wish our friend Professor Awesome was here. He knows so much about the Chinese.
We can have a corrections and omissions episode next time.
He speaks the language.
Yeah.
He's been there before.
Do you want to talk a little bit about Three-Body Problem before I get into it?
Oh, definitely a little bit. The book is The Three-Body Problem by Liu Cixin. And it was a very interesting book because it was the first book by a Chinese author, or I think, I was reading correctly, any Asian author at all, to win the Hugo Award for Best Novel.
Interesting. Yep. It's got the sticker right on the cover.
Exactly. Here. Yeah. That had never happened before. And the book was actually written in 2006, but it wasn't translated until 2014 into English. I think immediately won the Hugo Award after that. I had been hearing about this book for many years. Finally sat down and read it. Like I've mentioned multiple times, I want to read books from a perspective other than my own.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
What better perspective that is alien to me than that of a citizen of China? And it's very different. Reading the book, I'm like, okay, right away I can tell wildly different ideas about things, wildly different ways of telling a story. Very weird book is what I describe it. Yeah. I don't use the term weird dismissively. When I use the term weird, I like weird things. Weird things are good to me.
Yeah.
More things should be weird as far as I'm concerned. Reading The Three-Body Problem, I'm just struck by how weird it is. Okay, I wouldn't have told that story that way, but interesting. All right, I wouldn't have made that character do that. Weird. And just kind of interesting. Kind of kept me engaged the whole way through. Very, very neat concepts. The author introduces concepts of science and technology and extraterrestrial species that I had not really seen done that way commonly before. And it's because, like I've mentioned, you know, it's a perspective. Perspective that is wildly different from the ones I'm used to hearing from.
What can you tell me about Cixin Liu?
Not too much. I don't know too much about the guy. I just know he is an author.
Is he well-versed in, like, astrophysics?
That I weirdly don't know. Weirdly, I even looked him up. I could not find... His Wikipedia article is very, very scant.
Interesting.
Not a ton about the guy. I just know he's written the three books in this series. He was the executive producer on that movie we saw one time, The Wandering Earth.
Oh, movie? Yeah.
He was executive producer
on
that movie.
Oh, I hated that movie.
Oh, it's not bad.
That movie's ending sucked so bad.
Yeah, well, I mean...
The thing about that movie is... Okay,
I know. It was a political movie, kind of.
It was very PRC.
Yes,
and
yes.
Like, okay, so most of the movie, like, I was jiving with it. Okay, this is a disaster movie. It's a fantastical disaster movie.
Yeah.
And then the ending happened, and I'm like, forgot I was watching Chinese propaganda.
I know. Yeah, so weirdly, I don't know a ton about him. He's only been on the scene in science fiction world for the mid-2010s, when the English translation was made. I know the translator he worked with, who I thought was his brother, his name was Ken Liu. I just assumed in my head it was his brother.
Don't assume. That's a common Chinese name,
but no, the translator for the second book in the series with a different translator, and then he worked with the same translator for the third book.
Let's talk about the first book.
Sure, okay.
So I read the first two chapters.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. Interesting. That is one more than I thought you would read of a translated Chinese book.
Yeah. It was incredibly engaging. You used the word engaged. It was very engaging, and like I was furiously taking notes throughout the whole
thing.
Lots of stuff to say on this. Let's get into it.
Sure, yeah, let's get into it. Just real quick plot synopsis of The Three-Body Problem. We won't spend too long. The Three-Body Problem is a book that exists in a world in which scientists are turning up dead, and nobody knows why. There's a group of people who start investigating this why, and it starts uncovering a massive plot involving what they believe might involve an extraterrestrial species.
Yeah.
But don't really know why. And the book masterfully reveals this as the story goes on. That's kind of where the story starts.
After we're done talking about this book, let's talk a little bit about the Netflix series.
Sure,
We both watched the first two episodes. Mm-hmm. We have not watched the entire series, but we'll watch the first two and we'll talk about that after we're done talking about the book. But for now, let's pretend we have not seen the first two episodes.
Yep, we have not seen the first two episodes.
And let's just talk about the book. So it begins in Beijing, 1967.
All right.
China's cultural revolution is in full swing, though it's still new. A very, very thousand foot level explanation of the cultural revolution. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And again, I am not going to go into everything. I am not an expert, but I just want to explain what you need
this
to know
a
about it.
Very tumultuous time in China's history.
So it took place over a period of 10 years from 1966 to 1976, in which the youth of China, they rose up to get rid of the four olds.
Yeah.
And the four olds were old ideas, old habits, old customs, and old culture. And the biggest threat was capitalism. And among the biggest targets to be purged were religious and academic institutions. And academics especially.
Yep. Bad time to be a college professor.
It was.
Very bad time.
Yeah, they China. And they were especially persecuted in this period. They were either put into work camps or they lost their lives, like you were saying, if they didn't reject their own teachings.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. And that's important to know right now. And again, that's a very, 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 very brief and condensed version. There's a lot more that was going on, but I wanted to kind of put this into context of the book right now.
The way I like to think of the Cultural Revolution is it wasn't the revolution in China where China became communist. That was in the 1940s. The Cultural Revolution was about 20 years later when China became super communist.
Yes,
about
exactly.
20 years later, yeah.
At this university, back to the book, there are some academics who are essentially, they're being questioned or tortured before a live audience.
Yep.
And they're being made to confess like their sins, like the stuff they've they've taught to their students. It's so grueling and awful that a good many of them have already killed themselves so they don't have to go through this. This is really tense and I really dug the writing. Yeah, it's written well. It's a lot of telling and not showing, but I don't have a problem with it because I think it's setting up the context for an audience that doesn't know about what happened at this time, whether it's for Western audiences or whether it's for Eastern audiences that kind of lost that. One of the victims that's on this stage at this university is Ye Shetai, and he's a professor of physics. He's accused of teaching his students relativity.
Capitalist doctrine of relativity.
Yeah, so their thought process is Einstein is reactionary capitalism. There's some anti-Semitic dog whistles in there, too.
Oh, probably a little bit,
You know, he'll say anything for money, and, you know, I'm like, But also on stage with him, kind of off to the side, was his wife is Xiao Lin. She's also a physicist, but she's rejected all of her beliefs and her teachings, and she condemns him. It's to save herself.
Yeah.
She's been kind of backpedaling and changing her politics through her academics for a little while now.
Yeah.
She's kind of seen the writing on the wall and has been changing like the names of the theories. She's been changing attributions in her academics from single scientists to like the people have been writing this, you know, that sort of thing. You got to remember the Red Guards that are questioning and going through, they're children.
Yeah, they were. They were
they're
like
14 year olds. Yeah. You know, they're junior high school students or they're really young college age students.
People with no moral compasses.
They don't.
Which is why they're very useful for this kind of
They work. Don't have moral compasses, but they also don't have the mental capacity to debate with him.
Oh, yeah.
So they're like, theory of relativity and what happened before the Big Bang, and that clearly that leaves room for God, and he's, well, no, we don't know. And like, he's much more intelligent than they are.
Yeah. He's not going to convince them. They're not going to make him change their mind. It's all just a show.
What does that remind you of?
A lot of political discourse in our country today.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of scary.
Also, the attack on college professors also kind of reminds me of this time period.
Exactly. It's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
And it's horrifying.
I'd love if the people attacking college professors in America today know that they share a lot in common with the Cultural Revolution in China during the 1960s.
So as a result, he's beaten to death. These children beat him to death on stage, not just in front of his wife, who's like, she's lost her mind and, and disowned him. But as the crowd disperses, one person in the audience is his daughter.
Who watched the whole thing.
Who watched the whole thing. And she's just horrified and traumatized by this agony. She goes on stage and she like cradles her father's dead body.
Yeah.
And afterwards she goes to another one of her favorite professor's house looking for comfort. A female professor. Someone who she would go to for like advice and comfort. This professor also underwent the Inquisition, and one of the humiliating things they did to her, because they called her a capitalist, was they smeared lipstick on her face and they hung high heels around her neck.
Yeah.
The daughter, by the way, her name is Yi Wenji.
Wenji.
She notices that not only has this professor killed herself in her home, but when she died with lipstick on and high heels on.
Yeah.
Kind of like the last fuck you to this revolution.
Yeah. Yi Wenji is the probably most important important character in the book. The daughter.
This is the main character.
Yeah, this is the main character of the story. The daughter of the murdered professor in the first chapter is the single most important character in the book.
Yeah, this is the end of chapter one, and we now follow the narrative with Yi Wenji.
Yeah, so the second chapter picks up with her again,
yeah,
too?
We pick up 2 years later. It's 1969, and Wenji, she's like in a work camp. It's called the Inner Mongolia Production and Construction Corps.
A good communist name.
A good communist name.
Yes.
And basically, it's a camp for the educated youths, because at this time, anyone who was in college during the time of the revolution and had to leave, they didn't have anywhere to go. So they were forced to join these work camps in order to avoid dying or
else. It was a very anti-intellectual time.
Yes, exactly.
Another very similarity to the country we're living right now. Right. The way I'd always learned it in school was, if you were a smart person or you were an intellectual, or God forbid you even looked like you might wear glasses, it was a bad time to exist in the country of China.
Exactly.
They did not like smart people who felt like they knew more than other people.
Yeah.
So if you were one of those people, you got the hell out of town.
Exactly.
Which is what she does.
I'm assuming she's sent to this camp. This is...
It's kind of like, whether or not she's sent or whether she goes voluntarily is kind of nebulous. It doesn't really matter. She had to do it.
Yeah. But what they do is they're basically deforesting an area. And you don't know why. It becomes obvious later on. Thousands of trees come down each week.
Yep.
She meets this guy, and he's a reporter for a newspaper called The Great Production News. Again, very good communist name. He's absolutely appalled by all of this destruction and this deforestation.
Mm-hmm.
He's also appalled by the company's nonchalance to it.
Yeah.
There's this exchange he has with another person in the company, something about a tree falling down. He says, hey, this tree is like 300 years old, and it took you 10 minutes to saw through it.
Yeah.
What do you feel about that? And the person who sawed it down is like, it's just a tree. What do you care? But he notices that Wenji is also kind of disgusted by it, and they bond over that.
Yeah.
He gives her a copy of Silent Spring by Rachel Carson.
I would love to look up if this was an actual real book.
That is a real book.
Oh,
that is a real book. I've read it before.
Book?
Yeah.
Oh,
now,
you have?
I have. Yeah, it was required reading. That. It was required reading when I was in, I think, was it middle school or high school? I can't remember.
Not required reading in my school.
Probably not, because of the subject matter.
Yeah.
Now, Silent Spring was an extremely popular book in the 1960s when it debuted. It was a very gentle plea to the rest of the world to say, hey, maybe we better not use so much pesticide. Not only is it killing the ground, but it's also poisoning the animals and it's poisoning us.
Yeah.
Let's not do that anymore. Yeah. It's having a bigger effect on the environment, and we should really care about the environment.
Yeah.
And this was huge. This was revolutionary at the time. I think this came out in like early 60s. Yeah. Yeah, in 61, 62.
Yeah.
Again, it made us rethink about what we'd put in the ground. This was a real book.
And the EPA kind of got started shortly after that.
By Moulin, this reporter, he mentions that there's this giant satellite dish that's sitting up on a mountain, like right above the company.
Yeah.
That
where they're chopping down the trees.
Yeah, where they're chopping down the trees. And he says there's some weird shit that's happening.
Yeah.
There's likely a military base there. People are getting sick. They're losing their hair. The snow turns to rain.
Yeah.
No one's allowed to go near it.
Yeah.
And he asks Wenji to help him write this letter. He says, I'm writing this letter to the central leadership in Beijing about what all this deforestation is doing to the environment, kind of like what Rachel Carson did in Silent Spring.
Okay.
So Wenji reads his letter, and she's moved by it, and she says, "But your handwriting kind of sucks, so how about I copy it for you? And so she copies it for him, and he's very moved, and he says, thank you, and he sends his letter off. Immediately, they get caught. This Bai Moulin guy throws her under the bus.
Yeah.
He says basically that she wrote the letter. He's a piece of crap.
Yeah.
Actually, the narrative kind of shifts like toward him, basically explains that he continued working for this newspaper for a couple more years, and then he moved to Canada, and he taught in Canada for a while, and then he died in 1991.
See, these are the weird choices when I talk about the book. I'm like, the book will just kind of, this guy who's no longer going to be in the story
anymore. That was weird.
He goes to Canada, he teaches blah, 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 he dies. But
I don't know how I feel about that kind of stuff. It ends with, no one knows if he felt guilty or not for what he did to Ye Wenji. Yeah.
When you were writing a book and a character left, you wouldn't do that, would you?
No, I wouldn't. I would just write them out.
Yeah, just be like, they left.
I would keep the audience in suspense. Like, what happened to him? Like, oh no, you don't get to know.
I like it though, it's weird.
I guess he really wanted to thread the needle on that.
Yeah.
Wenji is immediately sent to prison. There's a female commandant.
I would compare it to something like your secret police.
She's like the Gestapo.
Very much like a Chinese Gestapo officer.
Yeah.
It's kind of what she's like.
So she appears in this prison cell where it's absolutely freezing. The furnace is out.
Yeah, she's being tortured.
And she's playing good cop. This female commandant. Commandant, I'll tell you what, we'll release you back to your camp. Yeah. All this will be forgiven if you just sign these documents here. So Wenji reads over the documents, and it's not really clear what they are, but it sounds like they're affidavits that conversations took place in her house amongst her father and a bunch of other political people about building a bomb.
Yeah, they're just using her for some political points. Yes. That's what they're doing. They're like, hey, sign these fake documents.
And she says, no, I'm not going to sign them because I don't know if these conversations took place. And that upsets the commandant. And she pours cold water over all her. Over.
Says, I hope you fucking get pneumonia and die. Pretty much is what she says.
Pretty much. Yeah. That's where chapter two ends.
Okay. Okay, so thank you. That was a very good synopsis of the first two chapters. The story goes on from there without spoiling too much. The story, which seems like, okay, any listener who's listening to this saying, okay, why do I want to read this book? This doesn't sound very much like science fiction. It sounds like historical drama set in China in 1967. And all I'm telling you is just buckle up, put on your seatbelts, and strap in.
Can we talk about the Netflix show? The Netflix show gets much more science fiction-y than what I read. It's a detective story.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's a detective played by Benedict Wong.
Yeah. Now, that plotline is in the book, too. Yeah. They just compress it because you have to do that in the show. They compress it. Yeah.
And that's kind of the frame story. It's like, present day, there is the murder mystery that you talked about. These scientists are
turning up dead.
Turning up dead, whether it's self-inflicted or not. Benedict Wong, you know, fan favorite or fan favorite. He's investigating this, but then it cuts back to 1967, where it tells this story. The scene where the commandant dumps water on her is in the first episode, I believe. It goes on to show what's actually happening with the satellite and what
the satellite dish.
The satellite dish.
The satellite dish. Basically, that big dish that Nina was talking about, where the main character Yi Wenji was doing the logging, the big satellite dish. She eventually goes to there.
Yeah.
This is not a spoiler. Mm-mm. She gets pulled out of prison, says like, "Hey, we actually need your expertise on this. Come work for us here." And the story kind of picks up from there.
Yeah. Criticism of the Netflix show, the biggest one is that D&D, they're working on it.
The architects behind the last seasons of Game of Thrones are working on this, and what I've seen of the show so far is not bad. But then once again, the first seasons of Game of Thrones were fucking incredible.
Yeah.
It just ended like goddamn horseshit.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the last episode of Three Body probably be like that. Who knows?
My second criticism of the Netflix show is that I thought the detective story, Benedict Wong's character, as much as I like Benedict Wong, I thought he was pointless.
Yeah, you could have cut that plot line. And me and Nina were talking about this. When you're adapting a book into a show, you have to change things around. You cannot just film what's on the page. That's not how it works at all. You have to do what's called an adaptation. You'd have to decide, okay, we're going to remove these characters, we're going to compress these plot lines, we're going to include these plot lines. Even still, it's not perfect. I agree. There's basically three main plot lines in the show: present day scientists, present day detectives, and then the past stuff that's happening to Yi Wenji. You probably could have cut out the detective story, but then once again, you wouldn't have Benedict Wong, and he's incredible.
You could have given him a different role.
Yeah, we'll have to watch some more episodes of the show just for fun, because it is very,
I haven't
very,
decided
very...
if I want to continue watching the show though. Yeah, that's well, the thing. But segue. I am going to continue reading the book.
Very cool. Hey, that's this season has been very different than the last season.
Yes, you're actually picking interesting books.
I just kind of learned. I think I learned from the first season what not to do, what books not to pick.
I like how the book is paced. Even if it does take some
weird little jaunts over
here. Weird jaunts. Yeah. Like at one point, the narrative skips forward 40 years.
Yeah. That is
even
why...
now, 40 years later, Yi Wenji is, and I'm like,
that
why
is
did
why
it do that?
I love this book because it is written from such a different culture than my own. There's definitely different things to talk about when you're reading a translation of a book versus a book written in its native language. That's a whole other literary thing to unpack there about the kind of ideas behind, are you really reading the original book even? Yeah. Or are you reading the book written by the translator?
I agree. Hey, we've seen that problem with Beowulf before and Seamus
Heaney. Very true. There you go. The translator can really, really change the book.
Yeah. And now reading Seamus Heaney's translation of it made me love Beowulf, made me want to get into medieval literature. Yeah. But you are really reading their interpretation of it.
Yes.
You are reading their version of
You're reading their voice.
You are reading their voice.
Yeah. Book. Yeah. This is Ken Liu's book based on The Three Body Problem by Liu Cixin. I'll just go out on a limb here. I'm never going to read The Three Body Problem in the original Mandarin.
Unless you are fluent in Mandarin.
That will never happen.
Again, you're never going to.
I will never read the original book. It's an interesting thought about that. Yeah. You already answered the first question. Would you read more? I'm delighted to hear the answer is yes. If you like what you read so far, you will like the rest of the book.
Good.
And do you think it worked out the first chapter?
Actually, I really do. The first chapter itself, it's very, very moving.
Yes.
Like, I knew, the first couple of paragraphs where it talked about the girl dying, being gunned down.
Yeah.
That was really interesting. I was interested to read more. It didn't talk down to its audience.
No.
Again, the pacing was really good. The descriptions were just enough.
Because it's being translated from something like Mandarin into English, I don't want to say the language is simplistic, but
no.
I want to say it's to the point.
Yeah, it's almost Hemingway.
That's a very good way to describe it. Because it's a person, they're translating a book. They may not be an author themselves, the translator, or they may be. I don't know. I believe it might help for a translator to also be an author, but I don't think it's absolutely necessary. Let's say if they're not an author themselves, then they're just translating the book. The writing may be a bit simplistic. And I don't mean that in a bad way. Like you just mentioned Hemingway. Fucking great author, wrote pretty simplistically.
Yeah.
I like simplistic writing.
Getting your point across in as few words as possible.
Exactly. And I think a translation of a book sometimes does that very well.
Yeah.
But getting into the Engineer Mike corner of the podcast here, do not read the second book in this series.
You mentioned that many times.
Very many times. I am not alone in thinking this. It's not the same translator, number one, though I don't think that's the main problem with the second book. The second book is so tonally different. The things you're liking about the first book are just not there. Even accounting for the different translator, thinking about D&D, you know, the makers of the Game of Thrones series and how they ended it, do not read the second book in this series. It will retroactively make you like the first one less. It is that bad.
I'm sorry, I was just thinking about Game of Thrones and how angry I am.
Yeah, exactly. I wish Game of Thrones sometimes ended after the fifth season stopped. If you stop watching Game of Thrones at that point, it's one of the most incredible shows you've ever watched. Here's the thing, the story ends wonderfully at the end of this book. You could just stop right there and it's fine. You don't have to read more. As a matter of fact, I think the impactful ending of this book is way better than anything that happens in the second book. So just don't even read the second
book. Well, I hear it's a whammer of an ending.
It is a whammer of an ending. Yeah, exactly. Is it a whammer of an ending? This one?
You said a whammer.
Oh, that was the other book I was talking about. I don't know if it's technically a whammer in this ending. It's like a warning.
A warning?
It's kind of like a warning shouted across the heavens telling you to, hey, watch yourself.
Okay.
It's a very good ending. I wish the damn series would have ended there. I wish the story would have ended there.
All right. Well, I'm only going to read this book then.
Please. Yeah. Okay. Please just stop right there. Yeah.
All right. Well, everyone, keep reading.
Well, keep on reading them books and listen to the audiobooks podcasts. And I always mess this up every single time.
You just have to say, thanks, everyone. Keep reading.
I can't say that.
Keep reading.
Thanks, everyone. Keep reading them. I can't do it. I can't.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to First Chapters, a podcast from Grey Cat Books. Your hosts were Nina McNamara and Engineer Mike. Our music was provided by Alex Productions and Virtua Jams. Check out our website at greycatbooks.com for links to our credits. Thanks again for listening.